This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. And tonight we've got one sponsor for the show. It's our good friends at Jam Software. And I'll tell you more about their product as the show goes on. Bradley, how's it going?
Fantastic day here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Fantastic day. Could not be better.
Great. Wow. Excellent. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, I made a purchase last night that I think you will find of some significance. Mm-hmm. I finally joined Relay FM as a member.
There we go. Yep.
Yeah. So that puts a dollar in your pocket. One of the cool things they have is a new secret show that is well worth the membership. I will just say that. You can sign up at relay.fm for as simple as low as $5 a month. I just went ahead and did the $100 a year plan, paid with Apple Pay. Fantastic checkout experience, but they have a new secret show that is well worth the membership. So awesome. Check that out at relay.fm.
I don't even know where that is, and I'm hosting Relay FM.
You'll find out soon enough.
Shows you how often I keep up with the Slack there over. So, last week's show was quite well received. We got some good feedback on that.
Yeah, we did. We sure did. I think it's sometimes like I said, I think it's good to get to know people. If I have an opinion about something that you don't quite understand, it may be that my opinion is shaped by something in my past. And the more you can learn about what might shape that, the more you can understand like my opinions or my feelings on certain topics.
Absolutely. So today we're going to turn the tables, Bradley, and I have actually got on paper, just so they couldn't be hacked by the Russians or anything like that, some questions for you. Okay. So
Sounds good.
You're quite happy, if you're well prepared, not that you can be prepared for something like this, shall we just get into it?
Let's do it.
Okay. I have got, in fact, 20 questions here. Okay. One of the pieces of feedback we got was that there weren't enough questions last time, so I've gone a little bit further. So number one, Bradley. Describe your workspace.
It is extremely, extremely simple. So I have a small office that has no chairs in it whatsoever. It has a standing desk from Jarvis, and it is set at 41 on the meter. So if you're ever use Jarvis, you can raise and lower it, and I keep it set at 41. I have just recently moved, I had this attachment from Jarvis that I put my monitor and my external monitor on. Like the external monitor was literally suspended in the air. But I got rid of that this week and I moved over to an Amazon Basics monitor stand. It's very similar to the M stand from Rain. And then it's like a knockoff of that, like $20. And then they make an external monitor stand as well to just kind of raise these things up closer to my eye level. Use the new models of the Apple Bluetooth keyboard and mouse. I use the trackpad, actually. On my desk is a phone, a lightning charger, two pictures, one of my children, and then a family picture with all of us, and a train steak that's actually a trophy from a relay race I won back last fall. I think I mentioned that on the show. It was a 100-mile relay race from Kennesaw, Georgia to Ringgold, Georgia, and my team won. So that was one of our things, was a train stake. And the idea behind it is that we ran along the old railroad from the Civil War kind of thing, path. And then I have a mug from the band Switchfoot that says, I want to thrive, not survive. So that's the layout of my desk. I don't have any chairs. I stand all day. I don't know why I don't have any chairs. I just don't have any chairs at all, even for guests. I don't have many guests that come in. And if they do, they're generally, I don't meet with people very often. Most of my meetings are via WebEx and things like that. So I don't necessarily have a lot of vendors coming in. And if they do, they don't stay long because they can't sit. Maybe that's by design.
That's very sophisticated thinking.
So then I have a standing mat a chef's mat that I stand on all day long. And if you're thinking about going to a standing desk, if you don't wear tennis shoes all day, you definitely want to get a padded mat to stand on. If you Google chef's mat or standing mat on Amazon, they are pretty cheap. On the walls, I have a couple pictures. The ones of interest are various University of Georgia, fan shots. One is of their mascot, one is of their stadium. We're big in my household. We're big fans of the University of Georgia football team. And if you're not from the Southern U.S., it's funny. The Atlanta Braves, the baseball team, could be in the World Series, and the restaurants won't sell out. But if UGA, was playing in any sort of significant game, I mean, like, it's, you know, shut down the city. So it's like college football is a religion in the southern U.S. especially. And then that's basically it. I have a, like, I think a 23-inch external monitor from Samsung, I think, on my desk. It's fine. It's not Retina, but it's fine. And then I have a 2015 Retina MacBook Pro, 1 terabyte drive, 16 gigs of RAM that I work off of.
Nice, nice. So next question, we're sticking with the kind of Teen Vogue theme here. Recommend to the listeners a nonfiction book.
A nonfiction book. Let's see, a nonfiction book. I just read a book over Christmas called To Pixar and Beyond, and it was by the original executive vice president of Pixar. And it's not really a guy you've heard of a whole lot. Like, he wasn't one of the creative guys. He was the guy that Steve Jobs brought on to kind of like actually help make money. And really, really enjoyed the book. I listened to the audio version of it from Audible, but really, really recommend it. Honestly, just really neat to see that side of Pixar. And really, it really helps you understand why they sold Pixar when they did. It was for a reason I never thought about. So it's called To Pixar and Beyond.
Great. This question is probably going to generate more controversy than any other that I could ask you. And I'm going to ask you, what is the best burger chain in America?
Chain. So let me preface this with saying that, like, the best burger place in Chattanooga is not a chain. And I think everybody, so we should, like, you know, I'm not saying, like, this is the best burger in America, but this is the best place that's a chain restaurant that sells burgers. My favorite burger in town is from a place called Armando's. There's like four of these in Chattanooga, and like, they have amazing burgers. In my opinion, the best burger chain in America is In-N-Out.
Okay.
And we don't have those in Chattanooga. And, mm-hmm. and so maybe that might cloud my judgment, because when I am at, like, the place we vacation at has them, and I really enjoy getting those there. Mm. And so that may cloud my judgment. But so I'm going to say In-N-Out.
You're associating that with holidays, aren't you?
Possibly.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, next question. Let's move into technology a little bit. What technology do you see disappearing in the next 20 years?
What technology do I see disappearing in the next 20 years? I am kind of bearish on the home assistants. As we know them today, like the Echo and the Google Home, I really don't see those things lasting in their current form. I think things like that will be around, but I don't think, like, we in 20 years we will be buying, like, little cylinders to do that. I think that technology will be baked into so many other things. The way I kind of came to this realization was, if those had came before the smartphone, we would view the smartphone as a superior version of that because it was mobile, or the smartwatch. And so I could see those things being baked into televisions, but I don't think they will be, like, we'll see standalone versions of that in the future.
Okay. So literally the newest thing in technology you're seeing is the first thing to go.
Not
the first thing to go, but in 20 years. Yeah,
I just don't like that. Like, the idea of that is okay, and it can expand to be great, but I don't think we'll be buying, like, $50 Echo, you know, little small, you know, speakers to buy, or $170 actual Echoes. Like, I think that technology will be baked into possibly everything we own, but I don't think it will be buying, like, little cylinders.
Cool. Good call. So what concerns you about the future of technology?
What concerns me is the idea that, like, governments can access all this information about you. And I don't want to get, like, all Minority Report, where, like, governments would be able to predict what crimes you would prevent. But, there's been a lot of controversy about this, like, among my people I follow about, like, you know, Apple's privacy stance on, they don't really want to know any data about you, and that leads to poor services, but yet, like, Google knows everything about you, but yet they don't really give that away. I mean, they know it about you, but they don't sell your information. They sell access to you based on your information that they know. And so my big fear is that like that information could be used to kind of like unfairly target you or unfairly stereotype you in a certain way. Like I'll watch certain movies or I'm thinking about like, you know, we were growing up, it was like, if you play violent video games, you'll be violent. And I'm not even having that discussion, but like, you know, like, oh, I see 5 years ago, you play this video game, you watch these movies and, you know, kind of data mining you as a person to future actions.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, I think, isn't it? Because I think one of the other things you sort of see is that as society and attitudes change more quickly, the attitudes that everybody had at a certain time or a large proportion of people had at a certain time can very quickly come to be seen as absolutely abhorrent. And if that's all recorded and databased and so on, you can quickly find yourself a victim for behaviours that were completely normal at the time or completely mainstream at the time. And, you know, that's a concern. I think, you know, you see some people being brought up for things that were considered like normal behaviour back in the day, and looking at it with the morality of 25, 30, 40 years later, people who are still alive are being pulled up for behaviours that everybody was doing back then, but some people have had the good fortune to die in the meantime and others are still around for it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I was in high school when like Napster was the thing. And mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, like, yeah, you know, it was wrong, but we were all doing it at the time. It doesn't make it right, but like, you know, yeah, that was, you know, we look at like illegally downloading music today is to me looked at differently than it was like 15 years ago. And I mean, to me, the crazy thing, if you would have told me like 15 years ago that in 2017, like 60 million people would be paying monthly for access to music, I would think you're crazy. Like, I would think there's no way that many people will be actually be paying for music. And I mean, to me, that's like a huge win for that music as an art, that so many people are willing to pay for it. Now, we can get into a whole argument about like the economics of streaming and how artists are paid, and that's a whole other discussion. But like, you have 60 million people that are paying, you know, $10 a month for access to music. Like, I think that's great. I was going to say, I think it shows that it wasn't that people were cheap, but like the purchasing model was terrible.
Yeah, and I was going to say that just the same about software. If you think back to the day when, you know, Photoshop cost $600 and, you know, lots of software was protected by hardware dongles and things like that, you know, it was a very common thing to go onto, you know, services like Hotline and download cracked versions of these things. And that was something that loads of people were doing back then. But nowadays, you've got things like the App Store. You can get incredibly powerful software for much cheaper. And again, the same kind of argument applies, doesn't it? That we can have a discussion about, is that a fair price to pay for that amount of effort and that amount of software and so on? But at the same time, you know, software piracy is not really a conversation I have in the same way anymore, except more to warn people, particularly kids in school, about things like, you know, watch out for viruses on your computer when you download shady software. You know, if you go to those websites, you're probably going to get a virus, rather than necessarily having the conversation that software piracy as such is wrong, because so few people do it anymore. It's not a common practice, I don't think, in a world where you've got app stores and so on. And I know developers are going to write in and say, yeah, but app store software can be pirated too, and I'm aware of that. But as a mainstream activity, it doesn't seem to be the same as it maybe once was.
So a good example for me is the Adobe software. So like 10 years ago or 15 years ago, when you went to college on a graphic design scholarship, everybody pirated that software because there wasn't really like, it wasn't as easy to buy it and it was expensive. I mean, it was, you know, $1,200 to buy Adobe. And I think they sold a student edition possibly, but then like everything was watermarked or something. There was some reason
why nobody to do commercial work with it or something.
Yeah, and so it was like everybody just pirated the software. Well, now like if my child was going to college on a graphic design scholarship or even just going to school for graphic design, I don't have to pay $1,500 for this suite. I just pay $50 a month or $30 a month. I'm like, that's a whole lot easier of a pill for a parent to swallow or even a student to swallow for school. Like, okay, this is just the application I need for my degree versus like, I just bought you a $3,000 computer. Now you need $1,500 worth of software on top of that. And it's like, okay, I'll just pirate that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Next question. I think I know your answer to this based on an answer to a previous question, but I was going to ask you, because you've done more of this than I have, is home automation going to be a commonplace thing?
I hope so. I think what has got to happen for home automation to take off is, A, I think you're going to have to, you know, it's going to have to get really, really cheap. And I think it has gotten cheap, like, or cheaper. But I mean, like, these things to hook up power outlets are still like $40 to $50. And so I think there's a difference. I think there's like a difference between, like, I have two outlets on HomeKit versus, like, literally my house has this baked in from the ground up. And so, you know, I know Apple is working with builders, like, in certain parts of the country to kind of do some of this stuff. But then, you know, so, but my concern with that is if things are literally baked into the house 30 years from now, like, how old is that technology? I mean, when I go into, like, if I see a home that has like a intercom system, how old does that seem now, like 30 years from now or 20 years afterwards? It's like, that's antiquated technology, but it was built into the house. Where if it's something like, is something that's external, it is easily replaceable. But on the flip side, when things are like not built in, they typically cannot work as well. So I really don't know. And I would like to think so, but I don't know how we get from the place that you can buy a couple outlets from Amazon or adapters to, like, from the ground up, I can walk into my home and, like, and just things work. And I think that's the challenge. Like, a lot of this technology can be fiddly, and then people just don't want to deal with it. And then, and so, like, there's a lot of things that are going to have to get a lot better. You know, so we shall see. I mean, I like the progress that's been made in the last, you know, 2 years or so. Like, I love my Nest. I'm even liking my HomeKit enabled power outlets. And I wasn't sure when Apple first launched HomeKit, like, I didn't understand that. But now that I've seen like what HomeKit can do about bringing in, you know, all these devices from multiple manufacturers inside of one app, I think it was a really smart idea, because that, you know, that to me was, is an easy selling point. So you don't have to, like, you know, because it's like, okay, I got this app for my power outlets, I got this app for my garage. It's like, no, it's like, you know, with HomeKit, you don't even have to use the manufacturer's app. You just use the HomeKit app that's built into your phone, and then it works off-site through your Apple TV. Like, okay, now we're getting somewhere. I can easily share all of this information with my wife through iCloud, with her iCloud account, and it's getting there. But, you know, what steps we'll see in the next 10 years, if it's still, like, something that's fiddly, you know, I don't know.
Okay. Simple question. Are you a backpack guy or a messenger bag guy?
I am a messenger bag kind of guy. I have a Fossil leather messenger bag I got from Amazon as like a birthday present to myself a few years ago. I am a real minimalist guy day to day. Like, and so in my bag is my laptop, a iPad style wall adapter, one lightning cable, and my AirPods. And that is all I carry back and forth to work every day. That's so funny. I don't even keep, like, iPad in the bag daily. Some days it's at work, some days it's home. I need to get back in a habit of, like, carrying it back and forth, but I just try to really limit day to day what's in what I carry. And and then I don't even keep, like, a Mac power adapter in there, which I used to do that. But then it's like, well, I have a power adapter at home and a power adapter at work, so why don't I need one in the bag as well? So if I wanted to be traveling, I can just throw one in the bag. So I'm really, like, a minimalist guy day to day. I mean, there's a part of me that, like, you know, when I was, like, you know, first when I was, like, at my previous job where I didn't have a laptop, I just, like, had a desktop at my office. It was nice just to, like, when work was done, you just, like, logged off and you walked out and got in your car. I mean, there was nothing to even carry. Like, I had my cell phone and my wallet, and that was it.
Those were the days.
Yes. Before we move on, let's thank our sponsor for tonight. It's the great folks at Jamf. With Jamf, you can bring the legendary Apple experience to your organization. Whether you have 10 or 100,000 devices, Jamf can help empower your end users to be more creative, productive, and happier, all while making your life easier. Start a free trial at jamf.com. That's JAMF.com. Thanks to Jamf for sponsoring Out of School this week.
Okay. I want to ask you a couple of things about education now, Bradley. What do you think of Common Core?
You know, I don't have a ton of experience with it because we don't follow it.
Okay.
But and that's one of the things that, you know, like, our city is unique, that, like, we're the third highest in the country on percent of kids in private school. And okay. There's a couple factors that lead to that. One is we have three major prep schools here that are very popular, like they have Borders, and you know, it's very popular. And then our public schools don't have the best public perception. And that's really all I want to say about that. I'm not saying that's true or not true, but they don't have a great public perception. So private schools have flourished in Chattanooga, and it's not a city you would think of that would happen in. But I do know the people that I'm friends with that have kids that follow it. I just saw a tweet a few weeks ago from a former coworker, and he said, "Thanks, Common Core, for making a math smart parent hate math." And so, regardless of what if it's good or not, I know the public perception of it is poor, and so in some ways, the damage is already done.
Yeah, I know that feeling in Scotland as well. Yeah, interesting. Okay. I had another education question here. Yeah, okay, so we're recording this the day before President-elect Donald Trump is going to be inaugurated. If you could tell a new president one thing about education, what would you tell him?
That there is more to education than looking at test scores. You know, we can cherry-pick data and we can look at data, but I know at the high school I went to, and the impact those teachers made on my life extend well beyond what I made on the SATs or the ACTs. And I didn't do very well on the SATs. I did okay on the ACTs. I'm a poor test taker. But so much about teaching, and I honestly think anybody that is like in their 20s or 30s, or you know, or just anybody in society that is not a total screw-up, owes something to a teacher somewhere along the line that invested in them. Because I'll say teaching is a hard profession. It is exhausting, and it in some ways is a thankless job. You do take a lot of the blame, but then the kids get a lot of the credit, which they should. It's like you're the offensive lineman. If anybody is a football fan, they'll get that you're the offensive lineman. You don't get any of the credit, but you take all the blame. And so for anybody that wants to invest their career in children and making children better, I think those are special people. I know there are poor teachers. I realize that. But I know I went to a public high school that wasn't fancy. It was just your average run-of-the-mill high school. And I can think of five teachers off the top of my head that I know invested in me and they were proud of me. And then I thought really genuinely cared about me. So again, to wrap that up, there is more to a great teacher and a great school than just test scores. Obviously, those are important and you have to have some way to measure schools. There's more to fixing, bad schools than just raising test scores. So many things go along with that. So there's so many socioeconomic factors that impact how a school does on test scores. That's just not about getting more money for iPads or just getting more newer schools. Like there's so many more things that impact that. That if you work outside of education, you view it. I think a lot of people view education as like a transaction. Okay, we get better teachers, we get better facilities, we get better technology, and then there's test scores. It's like, well, that's not necessarily a thing. That would be like saying we get better footballs, we get better goalposts, we get better bleachers, we get better uniforms. Now we win football. Like, no, there's more that goes into winning in football than just those, tangible things. That's the thing I would say. And that's not something I would have known, 15 years ago.
Okay. Good points there. Next question, which is kind of education related, kind of fantasy. If you could choose a new career without having to go through all the retraining for it, so fantasy brain switch, where would you go? What career would you take?
I have always been interested in actually building products. And when I say products, I don't mean even tangible things. I don't think I'm good at coming up with ideas in a way, coming up with a neat service or a neat this. But I don't think I'm necessarily the person to, they call them guys that this guy is good at taking a company IPO and that's about it. I think I'm that guy. I don't think I'm a guy that can take something that's pretty good and make it lights out incredible, but I can take if somebody brought me the Play-Doh, I think I can possibly assemble it in a place to get it to a really, really good place. And then possibly someone else takes it, the next step. I would love to work on work with a product like that, the startup. It's maybe I'm employee three. I'm not employee one. I'm not employee two, but maybe I'm employee three.
You're the grown-up supervision, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, something like that.
Nice one. Okay, here's a lighter question. Would you ever eat lab-grown meat? This is a thing you can do now, apparently. You can grow a hamburger in a laboratory, and it's pretty close to actual hamburger. Would you eat that?
I think I would. I have eaten some pretty gross things in my life. I've eaten pig brains before. Okay. One of the things I'm trying right now is I'm drinking Soylent. Have you ever heard of the Soylent?
I'm aware of Soylent, yeah. How is it going?
It's going fine. I've been doing it for breakfast and lunch for like the past week, and I feel great. I've not been hungry, but I've not been full. I'm trying to lose about 10 pounds, and this is not really a weight loss shake, but it's helping me be more mindful about what I'm eating. And I liked it so much, I went ahead and signed up for a subscription. I'm getting 48 bottles a month. That'll cover like the majority of my breakfasts and lunches in a month. And I think I might try that.
Is it actually people?
What's that?
Do you get that reference? The movie Soylent Green is the story is that they eat this thing called Soylent Green, and eventually they find out that it's actually dead people ground up.
Well, you know, somebody said that to me on Twitter today, and I didn't get the reference, but now I get it.
Yeah, it's an old sci-fi movie called Soylent Green, Soylent Green for everybody who hasn't seen it, but I think the statute of limitations has passed because it's a pretty old movie, and if you don't know, Soylent Green is people is the closing line of the movie, so spoiler horn, etc. But I don't think you can do spoiler horn after you've given the spoiler, but whatever. Okay, next thing. Have a wider view for me a minute, Bradley, and assess the impact of the iPhone on the world. We're looking at 10 years after the iPhone right now. How do you see the world as having changed?
I think it's like taught us that things of technology can become like mass market items. We were talking today about our like check-in system at our church, and it's like you print barcodes and things like that. And I was thinking, gosh, you know, wouldn't it be nice if that was like digital, like an SMS or something? And I was even thinking like, you know, it's just really in the last 10 years, you can just almost assume that everyone has a cell phone, and let alone most likely has a smartphone. Like certainly like in my circles I run in, like I don't know anyone that doesn't have a smartphone. And so that's interesting. Now, one of the things that's like, I was thinking yesterday, my kid was starting Taekwondo and I took his picture. He's like, Daddy, take my picture later. It's like, I wonder like how that is going to impact kids growing up, if they're going to have like these bad memories of mom and dad always wanting to take pictures of them. And I know parents have wanted to do that for a long time, but now we just have these things with us all the time. And so now another thing, a huge negative to me has been like distracted drivers. Like I am continually, my mind is blown by the number of people that text and drive, and like I can watch them and do that. I'm thinking, you know, stop. Like just, it doesn't matter. Like nothing you're doing on there, unless you literally have a cancer cure on there that you just realized and you're sending it to someone, it doesn't matter. And so I think this has also helped spur us onto like autonomous cars and self-driving cars. And like, I think that would be fantastic because it would save so many lives from car crashes year after year.
Isn't that an interesting idea that, you know, autonomous cars possibly come out of the fact that texting is so much fun that we had to invent autonomous cars just so we could do it more?
Bingo.
I sort of suspect that's actually the attraction for a lot of people, and certainly for companies as well, because if you think, you know, instead of the dashboard, you've got a Netflix screen or something. I'm thinking maybe a couple of generations hence from now, but you get the idea, right? That all those human hours spent in traffic and driving could be used to show you adverts. You know, that's there's pressure in both directions. Okay, so having assessed the impact of the iPhone on the world, give Tim Cook one piece of advice.
Be willing to change your mind more. You know, that's one of the things I've always thought that Jeff Bezos does well. And he says he can be convinced of anything. And I feel like there's, and again, I don't know Tim Cook, and I'm only like reading about, I only know what I know about him from like what he's given us in the public eye. So I guess I'll say that with a grain of salt. But I feel like there are certain things that he has dug his heels in and on, and possibly like privacy is one of them. And I feel like that it's making some products worse, like the fact that like Faces and iPhoto or the Photos app don't sync to the devices. Like it's actually making the product worse. And there's got to be a way to do some of this stuff while protecting people's privacy, but also still providing like a really great experience. And so like simple answer is like, be willing to have your mind changed on some things like that.
Yeah, good call. I would agree with that. I think the other thing I would put in that category is also the structure of product lines, you know, and in particular the practice of sort of continually keeping around the older versions and selling them at a discount. I think that's something that I would maybe suggest could be, you know, maybe the Tim Cook of 2017 could be a little bolder in killing off babies in the product line and moving on to the new thing. You know, I can't feel it. I long for like the iPod Nano moment. Do you know what I mean? Where the best selling iPod ever was killed in favor of the newer thing, which was obviously better, but it was killed at its height rather than killing off after it had become completely obsolete, but was still on sale, which is, I think, what's happened to some of the, you know, the iPad 2 and the first iPad mini and things like that, which basically withered on the vine and then they were turned off rather than having the audacity, if you like, to turn it off at its prime.
Yeah, I would, okay. Agree with that.
Yeah. Okay, I got a few more. Some of them are quite lightweight by comparison. That was a pretty hard one. Let's see. Where do I want to go with this? Describe the impact on your life of someone who has mentored you.
So there was this, I actually had a conversation with him, it'd be a text a few years ago, the guy that was like, baseball hitting lessons from him in high school. Probably got to know when I was 14. So like really like, 14 through 17 is when he was in my life. And just was a like real positive role model that wasn't my dad. Like, so he was like, he was probably 30 at the time, 32. And so like, it was obviously like an adult, but then wasn't also my dad. And obviously my dad was a great role model. But, sometimes it's like when someone's not your parent, it's a little bit different. Taught me a lot about hard work and the value of perseverance, helping to understand other people's opinions and perspectives, how that may shape them. One of the things, is interesting. Like we were talking about something and he's giving hitting lessons to a kid that goes to our school and he referenced me. And, I wasn't like, I was a decent athlete and I wasn't like, but baseball was probably honestly my worst sport naturally. I was really, really good at football and wrestling, but did not enjoy them as much as I did baseball. So I played baseball basically year around somewhat. I didn't do like the whole traveling team, but I'd play quite a bit. We played all summer. We played school ball. But again, that wasn't the sport I was the least naturally good at. And so you have to really, and like in retrospect, if you think like, why did I play that sport? I was going to start on our varsity football team as a sophomore at linebacker. And I chose, I don't want to play this year. And I just never went back and played. And it's like, that seems stupid. But in retrospect, it taught me the value of perseverance and hard work because, in reality, things are not always going to be easy. And it taught me that if I wanted something bad enough, I could do it. And I was like a pretty good baseball player. Like I started varsity for 3 years, I wasn't like incredible. I didn't play in college, but I was like for my high school, I was a good baseball player. And I earned that. I earned every bit of that through like just, blood, sweat, and tears, hard work, just working at it. And it taught me that. And then what's neat about it is I know hitting. Like I know hitting and I know the game of baseball very well. I probably could have been a baseball coach. They always say like your best players are your worst coaches. Like if you're naturally good at something, because you can't explain why you do that or why that works that way. And so like my oldest son, who is 6 now, is like starting to get into baseball and we're not even like signed up for anything. We're just like working out in the backyard. And like I know the proper hitting fundamentals. Like I still remember them. And I still remember how things work and like the angle of the swing and how you're supposed to hold your hands and like the old joke in recreational baseball is like, get your back elbow up. And I'm like, I can explain why that's terrible advice. Like I can physically say, let's break down the swing and that's why it's bad advice. So it taught me to be a student and it taught me to work. And that's going to be, I think it'll be nice is if my son does play baseball, I'll be able to really, really help him, from a young age. So yeah, he was a great mentor to me and spiritually was really impactful in my life growing up. And so, yeah, there you go.
Cool. Okay, let's round out with two simple questions, two light ones to finish. Number one, what's your dream holiday destination? Whether you've been there or you just want to go there.
I think Hawaii. I've always wanted to go to Hawaii. Mm. Never been. I think the idea of that is really, really nice. It's like it's a decent flight from Chattanooga, but like I've always wanted to go to Hawaii. My wife and I's big 10-year anniversary is this year, and I think we're going to try to do something big, but not super, super big because we still have small children at home, and it's difficult to travel when you have babies at home.
Cool. I grew up in an island as well. It was Millport, which wasn't quite the same thing. Millport is a tiny little island in a freezing cold part of Scotland. But I used to go on the boat to school, so I am an exotic islander too, I suppose. I got one more, and I want to ask you both what and why, right? Your favourite movie, but why is it your favourite movie, or why is it a great movie?
Favourite movie is The Usual Suspects.
Okay.
And it's trying to think how I can word this without spoiling. It's got a really, really impactful ending. And it's the kind of movie I'm not a person that like rewatches movies for like the sake of it. Like I will rewatch the Star Wars here and there, but like I'm not one that's like, all right, I don't know, like I'm trying to think of it. Just like any Joe Schmo movie, like I don't rewatch movies a whole lot. Like I've seen it once, why do I want to watch it again? I'd rather watch something new. But The Usual Suspect is like one of those movies where like every time you watch it, especially once you know what happens and like how it all ties together in the end, you go back and rewatch it just so you can learn new things about it. So it's almost like it's a different movie each time you watch it. Have you seen that movie?
I have not, no.
Yeah, it's got Kevin Spacey in it.
You recommended it to me before though, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a classic. It's got some language, so if that bothers you, then... you know, like, you know, obviously avoid it, but it's definitely don't watch it with your kids. Use your AirPods and watch it. But it's just a fantastic movie. I would say that's probably my favorite movie. You know, I was thinking about something going back to that, come on an island. Our headmaster asks like a trivia question every morning. It is actually fun. So if any headmasters are listening to that, you like, you know, do your morning announcements. Our headmaster has a trivia question every day and the teachers text in their answers. There's no prize. It's just like who can get it first, which class can figure it out first. And he has like a calendar or something he gets them from. And he asked the question, like, what's the biggest island? And I was even thinking, isn't everything an island? Like, isn't every continent at some point an island? It has water on all sides at some point, right?
Well, I suppose so, because the North Pole isn't actually solid land underneath, is it? It could potentially melt. So maybe we'll know within the next 4 years.
Something I was thinking about. But that'd be a good advice if you need something.
Europe is the biggest island. True, the Eurasian continent, yeah.
But something to spice up your like morning routine at school is like trivia question on announcements. And our kids love it. I mean, they just love it. It's like, especially on chapel days, because he announces the answer in chapel. And so it's fun.
And the winners pump their fist in the air. I'll tell you another story about trivia questions. When I was at university, I went to university in 1996. And we were the first people on the internet, obviously, but the internet wasn't like a common thing that everybody had access to all the time. So just a couple of years after I started, Starbucks opened up in the street that was kind of like the main street where you would go for food at lunchtime or whatever. And what they would do is they would put a trivia question on the blackboard inside the shop. And if you could answer the trivia question, you got a free tall coffee. So, of course, what was happening was that somebody who was coming in the morning would get the question out of Starbucks, and then they would email it round to everybody, and everybody would just Google it, and then they would just go and ransack Starbucks for free coffee. So eventually they figured out what was going on, is that the computer science geeks were going and looking up the answer on the internet and then coming down for free coffee all day. So that eventually got nixed, but that was one of those kind of arbitrage situations where we were living in the future with the internet and these people don't have it, and we were remorselessly taking advantage of them for free caffeine.
So we can't have nice things.
This is, we ruined it for everybody, I'm sorry. So Bradley, awesome answers, really interesting. I'm going to listen to that back. I really enjoyed learning that, all those things about you. Listeners have enjoyed it too.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again sometime. That was a lot of fun. Thanks for everybody for listening this week. You can check us out at outofschool.net, and I love to connect with you on Twitter. I'm at Bradley Chambers, and my blog is chambersdaily.com.
Okay, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.